Huge wheels and gears rotate as we move through them and come backwards through a keyhole in a massive door. The door swings open, revealing a bright red smoky background with Lionsgate in heavy gold letters suspended in midair. Labeling tape is printed. As we watch, Paramount Vantage moves in full center screen. Late night in a scrubby forest, circling a shabby cottage with Bruja painted on the window. Teenage boys throw rocks and shout Bruja, which means witch in Spanish. In a back room, a brown-eyed young woman forms a hangman's noose out of black electrical wire. She climbs on a chair and throws the noose over the rafters. A tear runs down her cheek as she sees the ghost of death appear, causing the chair to topple, leaving the young woman swaying in the dark. On the black screen, white letters appear. Lionsgate and Paramount Vantage present a CW production and Lionsgate production in association with Vertigo Entertainment. Sydney Wells, an attractive young woman on a crowded sidewalk. She wears fashionably large sunglasses and long brown hair. Behind her, a teenager on a skateboard maneuvers through the many pedestrians. The don't walk signal appears in the lamppost. Sydney stops at the curb and puts her arm out to stop the boy as a city bus roars by just inches away.
Oh, shit. Thanks. I didn't see that.
Neither did I.
She's carrying a white cane.
People say seeing is believing, but for me, that's not entirely true. I lost my sight when I was 5 years old. Those memories of what I have seen have faded so much that I doubt I'd even recognize myself anymore. Now I see using my other senses. I can smell the rain before it drops, but I can't watch it fall. I can feel the sun on my face, but I can't see it rise or set. I want to see the world like everyone else, to see the sun, the rain, and music. Oh, I bet music looks beautiful.
Rehearsal time at UCLA's Royce Hall. The audience seats are empty, but the stage is full of musicians, all dressed informally. The men in sports shirts, the women in slacks, and the conductor, Simon, in a black turtleneck. Sydney is the violin soloist. When the music ends, Sydney continues to play a one-fingered melody. The conductor breaks into a big smile. Some musicians join in. A cake with lighted candle is brought on stage. He blows out the candles.
Thank you.
Sneaks a taste of the frosting. And turns to hug Sydney. It's raining heavily at Sydney's apartment building.
Evening, Miss Wells.
Hi, Miguel. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The doorman takes her umbrella as she smells fresh lilies.
Myself, I prefer roses, but you're the first one that's noticed.
He's aware she's having eye surgery tomorrow.
Nervous about tomorrow?
No. Actually, I've never been so scared in my entire life.
Listen, the night before my mother's surgery, she drank 2 glasses of sherry.
Miguel leads her to the elevator.
Steady as a rock the next day.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. In her apartment, Sydney knows her way around and where things go. Her violin. Her keys. The answering machine.
This is
Dr. Haskins' office calling from County General. Your procedure is still on schedule for tomorrow. Be sure to arrive at the hospital 4 hours early for pre-op. Thank you.
Hi, sweetie. It's your sister. My flight gets in at 5 a.m. The whole crew's got a layover, so I'll find someone to give me a ride straight to the hospital. I love you, Sydney. Can't wait to see you. Bye.
From a top shelf of a kitchen cabinet, she finds a bottle of sherry and takes a sip directly from the bottle. At midnight, her hand reaches from the bed to her talking alarm clock.
12:10 a.m.
She gets up and walks to the window to listen to the rain. A full screen close-up of her face shows her blind eyes are blank. No iris. The camera pulls back hundreds of yards, revealing a sea of streetlights in the middle of the night. The main title of the film explodes onto the screen. The Eye. Sydney lies quietly in her hospital bed. Her eyes are heavily bandaged with plastic caps on top to protect the area. She wears a paper identification bracelet. The bed is slightly raised with a very large pillow behind her head. She listens for every sound. Two men in surgical gowns walk quietly down the hall. The movement of air in the ceiling ventilator, the sounds of the elderly woman in the next bed are on breathing support. Someone coming in your room.
Hello?
Shh. Martha will hear you. She's on from 12 to 6, and well, she takes away my M&Ms if I get out of bed. I'm Alicia. I'm holding out my hand to shake.
Oh, I'm Sydney.
I know, Sydney Wells. I kind of read your chart. You had a cornea transplant.
How old are you?
9 and a half. There's this, like, little golf ball thing inside my head. It made me so dizzy I couldn't even ride my bike. So the doctors are trying to get it out. When do you get to see?
Pretty soon, I think.
Good. I'll come back. And you can take a look at me.
Okay. Bye. Nice to meet you.
In the surgeon's office, a nurse is closing the curtains to lower the brightness of the room as Sydney and her sister Helen sit waiting for the removal of the bandages.
I'm starting to lose the feeling in my fingers.
Me too.
Okay. If you'll excuse me, please.
Dr. Haskins rolls a chair up to Sydney.
All right.
While Helen moves to the other side of the room.
Right. Now take the bandages off.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
He gently and carefully removes the tape from her left eye as Helen watches in nervous suspense.
That's one.
Then her right eye. Her forehead is wrinkled with worry. She's had a double cornea transplant after 2 decades of blindness.
I'm going to help you open your eyes. Very slowly.
Okay.
Here we go. Slowly.
Her eyelids flutter, open and shut.
Good. Now tell me what you're seeing.
Everything is blurred. Patches of light. And a possible silhouette of her sister.
I can't.
I'm going to hold up my hand. And I want you to tell me how many fingers I have up, okay?
Those are fingers.
Yes, they are. All right, here we go.
All of them?
Yes. Very good. Sydney?
Yeah?
I want you to try and reach out and grab my hand. Okay?
She reaches and misses.
It's okay. It's okay. Not everybody can do this right away. It's okay.
She thinks she sees a stranger in the room, but the blurred figure disappears.
burns a little. Is that normal?
Yeah, it's perfectly normal. Very good.
Thank you. Am I how you pictured?
Later in Sydney's hospital room.
I don't know. You're really blurry. I wish Mom and Dad were here to see this. Yeah. I think I wanted this more than you, Sydney. And then you were 12. I waited for this for 15 years. I thought I feel a sense of, sort of like, it's not your fault. Hey. It's not your fault. I'm sorry. You just need time. You'll see.
She kisses her sister's forehead. Later, Sydney lies in bed looking out at all the blurred images in her room.
Sydney? Can you see me? Don't feel bad if you can't.
What's that on your head?
It's a bandana. My grandpa gave it to me. You know, maybe tomorrow we can take a walk and I can show you the park outside. Palm trees look
Alicia.
Like... Alicia! Oh, coming. Sasquatch. Gotta go.
Bye.
In the middle of the night, Sydney turns to see what looks like a person standing next to Mrs. Hillman's bed.
I don't want to go.
Hearing Mrs. Hillman say she doesn't want to go, Sydney squints her eyes to try to clarify the blurred vision of that person.
Mrs. Hillman.
In her long gray hair and hospital gown, the elderly woman follows the shadow figure out of the room. Outside of Sydney's room is empty. Curiosity driven, Sydney steps out into the shiny floor. She looks carefully in both directions, but her blurry vision shows her nothing. She turns and slowly returns to her room.
Oh.
This time she sees the silhouette of a figure at the far end of the hall.
Mrs. Hillman?
Step by step, she moves towards the moaning and the shadowy figure.
Where are you taking her?
The person moves suddenly away, out of sight. Sydney stands puzzled. Sydney spins around to see Mrs. Hillman directly behind her. She spins again, and the apparition is on the other side of her. Everywhere she turns, Mrs. Hillman is coming closer and closer. And suddenly it's over. Sydney's standing alone in the hospital hallway. But no, Mrs. Hillman appears halfway down the hall, walking towards Sydney, repeating, I'm freezing.
Freezing.
I'm freezing. Sydney puts her hand out to touch Mrs. Hillman to see if this is all real. Again, she's alone in the empty hallway. She looks in both directions. The long hallway is totally empty. Sydney Cassidy lies awake on her bed as an orderly pulls back the curtain. A nurse and the orderly are clearing the bedding in the next bed.
Where's Mrs. Hillman?
Oh, I'm sorry. She passed away last night.
Later in Dr. Haskins' office.
Everything is just perfect. You're recovering quite nicely. And the tearing has stopped?
I think so, yeah.
Good.
So, whose eyes were these?
Excuse me?
My donor.
I'm afraid I can't help you with that, Sydney. These are your eyes now and they're working. Shouldn't matter where they came from. Does that hurt?
Yeah, a little. When will I be able to see more clearly?
Well, it varies with each patient. A couple of days, a couple of weeks. But your vision itself isn't the issue. Since you've been blind so long, I'm going to refer you to a specialist. Paul Faulkner. He'll help you.
It's okay, I'm fine.
Oh! You all right?
Yeah. All right. Have a nice day off tomorrow.
Thanks, Sydney.
Okay.
The orderly has brought Sydney back to her room in a wheelchair. She is again wearing those large sunglasses. She sits on her bed and removes the glasses. Everything she sees is blurred. She gets up and moves to the bathroom. She squints because the light is so bright. Because of her blurred vision, she can barely perceive her reflection in the mirror. But she starts making faces at herself. A big, twisted face. She sticks her tongue out, way out. After all, she hasn't seen her face or her tongue for years. Helen pushes Sydney's wheelchair into the children's ward. Alicia is receiving chemotherapy from a plastic bag on a tall stand with wheels.
Are you ready to be my tour guide?
You're leaving?
Yeah, I'm afraid they've had enough of me here.
This is my sister Helen. Helen, this is Alicia.
Hi.
Hey, can we get a picture together?
Of course.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay.
Alicia skillfully wheels the chemo stand as she moves to the long side of Sydney.
I know you're scared, Sydney. Don't be. The world, it's really beautiful.
Okay, smile.
On the way home in Helen's car.
My carry-on's in the truck. I could just sit on your couch, you know? I could make you meals and clean and go to some art galleries. Is it too much for you? Shall we pull over something? Just say the word, okay?
No, no, no. We can talk every day. You can come over and check on me. I really think I just need to do this on my own, okay?
Okay. Understand.
In the hallway outside Sydney's apartment.
I got some new lamps for your place.
Oh, thanks.
I put them in. Here. I'll do it.
Okay. She takes her keys to open her own door.
Surprise!
All her friends. But she's never seen their faces. Her vision is totally blurred.
It's okay, it's okay. Do I know any of you?
Welcome home.
Oh, hi, Jim.
How
are you?
Nice to see you.
But she recognizes their voices.
Hey, Sid. It's me, Alex from upstairs.
Oh, Alex. Wow, nice to see you.
Okay. It's your cousin, Sarah.
Oh, Sarah. Oh, it's been so long. So happy.
Recognize my voice?
Oh. Hi, Cynthia.
How did you know it was me?
How could I not, Cynthia?
What's up, girl?
Oh, Richard. Hi.
She hugs each one. Now she moves her hands over Richard's shaven head.
This is what bald looks like.
Hey, Sydney. How are you?
Miguel. How are you?
You're good.
Oh, honey, I'm so happy.
Oh,
honey, how are you?
Cindy, it's Keisha. How are you feeling?
Yeah, you look great.
Hey, take a bite.
She begins to be overwhelmed.
Do you need some water or anything?
Yeah, I'm gonna go to the kitchen. Why don't you stay with the guests?
Socialize. Oh, thank you guys for coming.
In the kitchen, she pours a glass of water. Later that night, Sydney lies in her bedspread looking closely at her violin. No one is in the kitchen, but the lights turn on. Hearing some strange sounds, she enters the kitchen to explore. She stops in front of the stove. Then pries open the oven door. It's empty. But a giant flame shoots up. She sits up in bed, holding her face between her hands. Was this all a dream? As she watches, her room changes to midday with the sun streaming through the windows. Then, just as quickly, the room changes back to late night. She squints her eyes, shakes her head, then touches her talking clock.
1:06 a.m.
The next day, Sydney visits Dr. Paul Faulkner's office. She's looking at a fish in his aquarium.
Hi.
Hi.
Sorry I'm late. That's Henry. I'm Paul.
Sydney.
Have a seat.
As she sits in front of his desk, he removes his suit jacket and reaches into his bag for his notes.
You damaged your corneas when you were 5?
Yeah, my sister and I were playing with firecrackers. I tried a transplant when I was 12, but I rejected them.
Stem cell research. Changed the game. Is that why you tried again?
Well, no, my sister was really the one who kept up with all that
stuff. Faulkner is medium height, brown hair, 2-day beard, and occasionally puts his horn-rimmed glasses on the top of his forehead.
These are Dr. Haskins' test results. There's nothing physically wrong with you. The operation went flawlessly, but you're probably in for a shock.
Why?
You already filter information from sound, smell, and touch, but now you're going to be assaulted by a million things you never even knew existed.
Down the stairs, outside his office.
It's a whole new level of confusion. Do I look here? Here? Is that bright thing important, or this dark one moving toward me, away from me? Dangerous or not? As long as your eyes are open, there's just too many distractions. I mean, how do you concentrate? I'm talking to you, and you're looking at that woman, and you're thinking, is she going to eat that? That's a pineapple, by the way. You cut it open.
I like pineapple.
Alone on the sidewalk, she bangs into people.
Sorry. Anyway, because you can see, people are going to expect you to be able to do things that you can't do. Read signs, recognize body language, people's gestures, facial expressions, and just get out of their way.
In a flower shop.
Your eyes will want to dominate how you perceive the world, but you can't fully trust them, not yet. In the next few weeks, I'm going to help you to see the world like it really is, okay? Some of it's going to be wonderful, a lot of it's going to be difficult, but the main thing is to be prepared, and that's where I come in. We're in this together.
Sydney carefully walking on stepping stones across a pond. now in her apartment. Sydney's holding sheet music close to her eyes, then moves her hand across a braille sheet to relate what she has known for the last 20 years to what she is reading now. The light under her front door shows a shadow of someone walking by. She moves to the door and looks through her peephole. The hall, although still pretty blurry, looks empty. So she opens the door and steps out into the hall. She moves down the empty hall, one hand touching the wall, sort of feeling her way as she hears strange noises. Finally, she stops, then turns around. On the floor where she had just walked, a child in a raincoat.
Oh, you scared me.
Sydney walks to the child, who stands, his raincoat hood obscuring his face.
Hey, have you seen my report card?
Your report card? Do you live here, sweetie?
My father will be so mad at me. Have you seen my report card?
She turns to look down the hall. As she turns back, the child is gone. The hall is once again empty. She stands, puzzled and confused, in the middle of the long hallway. Sydney is rehearsing in a recording studio. Her conductor, Simon, is at the piano.
Oh. Sorry.
Let's take five.
I'm sorry, I don't know what's wrong with me.
Relax. You're pushing too hard.
A close-up of an espresso coffee machine shows us we are now in a coffee shop.
You know, when I first went to London to work with the Philharmonic, I was so nervous. In Prague, I was a big fish. In London, one of the hundreds.
You did so well in London.
I never thought I would be ready. But when it was time to go on, everything faded away. It was just me. I wasted so much time being worried when there was nothing to worry about. And now, Sydney, will you be ready? We are all counting on you.
I'll be ready.
I'm sure you'll be.
Number 42.
42? That's us. You sit, I'll take it.
42?
Yeah.
Is it Solomon?
It's him.
Oh, I hope it's... Oh, can
you change? Sydney watches Simon, the clerk, move to the end of the counter. And she happens to look toward the back of the room.
You think I'm not going to do something? That's it, right?
Staring at her is a woman in a black beret and pale as a ghost.
I'm gonna do it. I'm sorry?
I told you I was going to do it.
Sydney looks in every direction, trying to see Simon or anyone who could help her.
Oh, my God.
One moment, the woman is gone. Then she's back, leaping at Sydney. She almost grabs Sydney's hair, but disappears at that very moment. Sydney and her chair topple over onto the floor as Simon rushes back.
There was a woman. She came at me.
What woman? What woman? Christ, Sydney, get a hold of yourself, please.
She picks up her coat and leaves the coffee shop.
I apologize.
It's all right.
The woman's handprint was left in the spilled sugar. In her dark bedroom, Sydney sleeps next to the alarm clock, which again reads 1:05 a.m. It changes to 1:06. A demon engulfed in fire. Sydney begins a restlessness in her sleep. A little girl at a window screams in agony. Boys throw rocks in front of a brick wall, graffiti painted with brouhaha. Sydney jolts upright. She watches her room change. The walls become the rock walls of a cave. She covers her eyes, but the changing images remain. Then she carefully gets out of bed. Looking up, she sees a noose made of electric wire. Is this still part of a dream? A nightmare? Walking towards the rock wall, she extends her hand, reaching out to touch the wall. Closer and closer to the wall, when suddenly, a metal chair goes flying past her. She spins around, startled. The alarm clock changes from 1:06 to 1:07. On the balcony outside Paul Faulkner's office, he holds a thick folder, the report of her tests.
From the latest results, there's nothing wrong with your eyes.
Well, maybe there's something wrong with the tests.
Well, the tests only gauge the fact that you gave no abnormal responses. Creative ones, yeah, the kind that artists and musicians give, but last I checked, you are a musician.
I'm sure other musicians don't see what I've been saying.
Come with me.
I'm not an idiot. I understand what you're telling me. My brain is having to relearn how to decode the world around me, but that's very different from me seeing things that don't seem to be real.
How?
Look. You're real. Okay? You're here. My perspective and focus is off, but you're real. I can see you.
Paul turns away, thinking how to convince her.
We see what we look at. But the way that we see things is affected by what we know, and there's a lot around you that you can't make sense of yet.
What are you saying to me? You think I'm making this up? You think I want this to be happening to me?
You think you're not going to be able to push through this? You think you were better off before? More special? Well, you just discovered that now you're like the rest of us.
Stop. You know, when we first met, I didn't think you were such an ass.
That's because you didn't know how to spot one. See? Progress.
He smiles and walks away.
Have a good evening, Miss Jolly.
Later, Miguel greets another tenant at the elevator as Sydney arrives home.
Miss Wells, your new TV is here. My buddy from the cable company hooked you up.
Thank you, Miguel.
And welcome to the 200-channel universe.
Thanks. Bye.
Good night.
In a gray T-shirt and bare feet, Sydney sits on her couch eating ice cream and clicking, clicking, clicking the remote through her new 200 channels.
Careful! Check out your new town.
Seems spread out. It's kind of a hike.
But she realizes something is wrong. A look towards her front door shows her that smoke is coming from under the door. She turns the television off and rises across the room. She looks through the peephole to see smoke billowing along the hallway. The smoke from under the door rises up past her face. Is that a person slowly walking through the smoke? As she looks through the peephole, a dark figure lunges at her door. She jumps back. Her apartment is now filled with smoke as she heads for the kitchen. She wouldn't be coughing if she were lying in bed sleeping and dreaming. In her kitchen, there are flames everywhere. But it's not her kitchen. It's a pottery factory with shelves and ladders and machinery and cans. She looks in every direction. Where to run? A man on fire bolts out of the flames to pursue Sydney. He knocks her to the ground, then grabs her bare arm and pulls her up. She screams, and the scream turns into the little girl at the window screaming as she falls into the flames. One quick look at the dark-haired woman with bleeding eyes replaced by Sydney on her couch. The peaceful scene on television is contrasted by her bare arm with four deep cuts. And as she watches, the cuts heal and disappear. Sydney's walking the next night, down a busy street, cell phone to her ear. A message from her sister, Helen.
Down till Saturday, so if you need to contact me, do so after the beep.
Hey, it's Sid. Please call me.
Absorbed in her own thoughts, she walks out into the street to cross to the other side. As she is crossing, a pretty blonde girl crosses and walks right through her. Startled, they turn and stare at each other. Then they are both distracted by a crowd around an accident. A car, one wheel on the sidewalk, is surrounded by a crowd looking down at a victim on the ground. As Sydney walks toward the group, the pretty blonde girl stands in the middle of the street watching. The dead body lying there is the pretty blonde girl. Sydney turns to look back at the girl, but the street is empty. The blonde girl is gone. Yet when she looks back again, the blonde girl is there with a faceless black shadow demon touching her shoulder. As the shadow leads the girl away, he howls at Sydney. Then they both fade away and disappear. In a Chinese restaurant, the chef is chopping food as Sydney enters, all panicked and disoriented. She stumbles past the kitchen and collapses in a small booth. Immediately, digging in her pockets for her cell phone and Dr. Paul Faulkner's business card. Her fingers trace the Braille phone number on the card.
Hi, you've reached the cell phone of Dr. Paul Faulkner. Leave a message after the beep.
Hi, Paul. It's Sydney. I'm at a Chinese restaurant on the corner of 4th and Figueroa. Something's happening to me. And I need you to come. Please.